This week's episode contains disturbing themes that some listeners may not be comfortable with, including sexual assault and paedophilia. Listener discretion is advised. Hi everyone and welcome back. We're finally here at episode 12 after a few weeks of delays, just due to me not being very well. Sorry, you can probably hear I've still got a little bit of a cough. I haven't had coronavirus or anything like that. I've just had some bad asthma, kind of hay fever and things setting it off. So I didn't really want to talk for an hour and get really out of breath. But thank you for being patient with me. I just have a few quick updates to do before we get into this week's episode. So firstly, if you are a Patreon member, there is a little bit of a backlog, unfortunately, with episodes at the moment, just with me being ill and things. So it is going to be maybe another week before the next Patreon episode is released. Thank you for being so understanding about that. And secondly, the winner of the book competition that I had running on Instagram, like the book giveaway for Anne Rule's Stranger Beside Me, that is going to be announced today. When this episode goes live, that the person that won that will be told and their name will be kind of tagged on the post. The only thing is, at the moment, I can't really post it. I know that there are some things being posted. I don't really want to post it until lockdown's over, so it will be maybe a few more weeks until you receive your book, unfortunately. I hope you understand. And the next thing is, so one of the Patreon episodes that I had planned was going to be a listener kind of experience episode, so people sending in their own experiences with stalkers and me just kind of telling them to everybody. I got so many good messages and like good feedback on that I actually thought, you know what, I'm just going to make the first one free for everyone to kind of make up as well for me being gone for about a month. Which means basically that there is still a week until that episode will be recorded. So if you do have a stalker experience or kind of anything that you think fits into that, it could be anything you think kind of fits into the stalking category for any type of stalker, and you would like to share it, please message me or email me and I will try and include as many as possible. I will try and keep them all kind of confidential in nature, so even if you do accidentally include a name or a location, I'll try my best to remove it. So you can message me on Instagram or email me. And lastly, I just hope everyone is keeping safe and staying indoors. Okay, so this week's episode, we're going to be focusing on the rarest and yet the kind of the type that's considered most dangerous, and that is the predatory stalker. I did briefly touch on this in episode, I think it was episode 3, it was episode called Night Stalkers, but it is such a, like, an interesting part of stalking and such, like, I think one of the main kind of types and definitely one of the most dangerous and one of the most unreported types that I really wanted to kind of do another episode on it where we'll kind of look at the profile of them and then we're going to look at a very recent case as well. So first let's do what I normally do and we'll start off by looking at the kind of psychology or profile, kind of like your profile if you like of this specific type of stalker. Just in case you're new here and this is the first time listening, it's probably best to go back and start listening from episode 1 to get a full understanding of what I mean by different types of stalkers, because there's kind of 5 key types, and I go through it in some detail in episode 1, so it might just help you understand this episode a bit better. If you don't want to or you don't have time, there is essentially 5 types, like I've said, of stalkers considered in psychology and criminology, and the most likely one to commit violence, the most dangerous considered, is the predatory stalker, and they're also probably the most rarest type of stalker, and that's the one that I'm going to look at today. Alright, just to quickly mention as well before I go any further, I am obviously, everyone's working from home. I normally record from home, but I have my cat with me today because she's been very clingy. So if you hear any unusual noises, like the sound of me laptop. That's because she keeps walking over it, and she is now just sat next to me attacking a toy mouse. I've tried putting her out of the room, she just meows, so we'll just have to put up with it. But that's, if you can hear any unusual sounds, that's her. Okay, so the predatory stalker. They typically tend to be male, and they tend to be relatively well educated. They normally or quite often will have families or children, and it's often the case, as is with a few different types of serial killers, that when they are caught, or if they are caught, people that know them will be shocked. That is, it's not uncommon with kind of the predatory stalker, serial rapist, serial murderers. Yeah, they will also typically have more than one victim throughout their span of stalking. And the drive of predatory stalking is always some kind of sexual motivation. So they tend to pick someone, follow them for a few weeks or months or days. I mean, it really depends. It's different. And there's also kind of a cycle similar to serial murderers, where they might have shorter and shorter periods between the cooling off period and between the attack. So, you know, it could be weeks, it could be days, it could be months. They will follow that victim. And the goal of following them, as well as obviously the excitement that they get from following them and the anticipation of the attack, is actually so that they can gather information. So they like to know, you know, when will the victim be alone? What route do they take? What time do they typically get home? Do they have any pets? Like, do they have a dog? Do they live with someone? If they do, when are they at work? When are they away? Do they have an alarm code? What time, like, do the lights go off at night? There's so many different things that they like to watch and to record and to plan. It basically helps them plan the attack, but it's not just for information gathering. They also do take part of the thrill in kind of watching the victim and the victim not knowing that they are there. So they are called the predatory stalker because essentially they are like a predator in the wild. So a predator in the wild will follow the victim. They will assess them. They will find the best place to attack them. And they will normally do this without the victim or the prey knowing that they are there. So this is kind of where the predatory stalker gets their name from, because the behavior is quite similar. So it is for all these reasons that I've mentioned that it is considered, kind of within psychology and criminology, that most serial killers have often began as predatory stalkers. You'll often hear stories of serial killers beginning as peeping toms, or, you know, conducting smaller attacks and then escalating. And that is the case definitely for I know I've mentioned this before, but Ted Bundy, I think he started as a predatory stalker because he began kind of spying on women getting changed, and then I think that he stole like underwear and things from women's washing lines. And actually I think the Golden State Killer did that as well. So that is kind of starting out as a predatory stalker. Yeah, you're probably tired of hearing this word, but I'll keep saying it because it just is so important. With all crimes like stalking or serial murder or serial rape, especially those with sexual motivations, escalation is a key part of it. Nobody wakes up and commits the perfect serial murder. It just doesn't work like that. It's part of evolving. It's part of escalation. I don't really think it's a conscious plan. I think during their crimes, they will escalate further and further because the thrill or the effect that the last kind of attack had is dulled. So the escalation from simply watching somebody through their window to stealing an item of their clothing to attacking them is because the thrill of the last thing, yeah, like I said, it's dulled, it's worn off, There's a really good song by The Police called Murder by Numbers, and they say in that song that murder is a habit forming need for more and more, and I think that that just kind of hits the nail on the head. The escalation is unconscious. It's that they need to do it because the last thing that they were doing no longer has the effect that they need. So personally, I think one of the most scary aspects of the predatory stalker is that unlike the other types, like particularly the rejected stalker, who kind of want to be seen and want to make their presence felt to the victim, the predatory stalker wants to remain unseen. Their victims often had no idea that they were being watched or followed until after the attack has taken place. And so unlike the other victims, or the other types of stalker, sorry, the victims will typically not have reported anything to the police prior to any acts of violence or prior to the main attack. On the rare occasion that they might notice that something is kind of off or something isn't right, it's often more of a feeling that they get than a key piece of evidence. They might just feel like they're being followed, feel like they're being watched. Or very occasionally it could be that some items have been like misplaced or moved. I know I've mentioned this TV series before, but the TV show The Fall, which I think is a BBC show, and set in Ireland, it has Gillian Anderson in. The main character in that, the serial killer Paul Spector, is a great example of a predatory stalker that has escalated to serial murder, and he still conducts a lot of the predatory stalking kind of traits or behaviours that kind of are the key ones. So in episode one, he does follow his victim to gather information, and obviously it excites him as well, and he prepares his attack by following her. And I think he actually, I can't remember exactly what he does, sorry, but he breaks into her house a good few days before he is planning to attack her, and he just leaves things not right. Like, I think he leaves underwear on the bed, and I think he leaves a half-eaten orange on the bench and stuff, and it just seems so small and insignificant to everybody else around, and even to the police. They often don't really take things like that. I mean, it's not a crime, essentially, is it? It's not a burglary or anything, so it just seems so small and insignificant, but it's just this kind of mental torture, I guess you could say, to the victim. Almost like letting them know that something is coming, which is just, like, terrifying. But, yeah, there's a really great example of that in The Fall. If you haven't seen it, definitely go and watch that. But yeah, so just like with serial killers, this type of stalker tends to target within its own ethnic group, typically, and they will have some sort of cooling off period between each attack, which normally will get shorter and shorter, as I mentioned before, as the effects of each attack wear off quicker than the last, meaning eventually that most predatory stalkers, unless they are caught, eventually rape or sexual assault alone will not be enough, and they will often progress to murder and possibly some kind of mutilation. Again, similarly to serial killers, the predatory stalker might take a trophy of some kind from the victim, and this is often done in a way of kind of, it's a way for the serial killer or the predatory stalker or the serial rapist to relive what has happened, to relive the attack. And I think it's often done in a kind of an unconscious way to kind of prolong the need for them to do it again, to kind of prolong that cooling off period. As I've mentioned, the motivation, the drive for predatory stalkers, the essentially thing that makes them tick is the fear and control of another human. Okay, so for today's case, we're going to be looking at a prolific serial rapist who I believe was a predatory stalker. They definitely display behaviours of it, and they attacked at least 11 women and children that we know of. I think it's really important to remember that when a serial rapist or a serial murderer is convicted, like the number that they are convicted of, it could be significantly lower than the actual number. The time period that the police start to investigate them, it often has been going on for a lot longer, and a lot of the cases just go unsolved, which is really unfortunate, especially in the cases where families don't know where bodies are and things. So it's always important to remember that although the police say, yes, this person was active between, you know, X and Y, and they killed, you know, Z amount of people, you just don't really know. It could be so many more, and it could be for such a longer period of time. Reported that this person we're looking at today attacked 11 women and children. I think it's probably a lot more that we just don't know of. Yeah, but this week we're going to be looking at the case of Joseph McCann. And as with most cases that don't involve murder, so most cases of kind of predatory stalkers or serial rapists, the press coverage has been somewhat limited. So I have researched what I can, and I've tried to get as many details as I can and as much information as I can, but it might contain some inaccuracies, so I do apologise for that. Okay, so Joseph McCann was born in February 1985 in London, England. Although he was born there, his family were in fact Scottish and Irish, and they had strong links to the traveller community and would later eventually relocate to Manchester. So even before Joseph began to carry out rapes and the attacks that he was convicted for, he had several run-ins with the police starting from very early. I think the first recorded one was around about the age of 11, carrying on throughout, up until he was finally apprehended. Joseph committed things like theft, arson, intimidation, muggings, general violent behaviours. Due to himself and his brother's behaviours, the family were actually eventually evicted from their council house that they lived in Manchester, and that was around about the late 90s. They moved somewhere else in Manchester. I don't think they left just yet. And straight away, they continued to commit crimes again, the two brothers, and they were eventually issued with something called an ASBO, which I think most people in the UK will know what an ASBO is. If you don't, an ASBO is a form of punishment. It stands for Antisocial Behaviour Order. It's basically like a ban or a restriction on that person. So for instance, if you have been shoplifting in a city centre, you might be given an ASBO that prevents you from entering any of those shops or that area. If you have been committing kind of violent or intimidating behaviours, it will prevent you from doing anything like that. And it basically means if you break it, you can go kind of straight to prison. You don't go back. You don't kind of get any more cautions or anything. That is, it's kind of like a restraining order, but not against a person, against a type of behaviour. And I actually think that they were one of the first people in the UK to be given an ASBO. So, I mean, that gives you an idea as to how, like, the extent of their behaviour at the time. It must have been quite severe for them to be one of the first kind of set of people to be given it. Yeah, so they were given an ASBO. They just continued to commit the crimes, so they broke their ASBOs. And basically, the brothers and the rest of the family decided to move back to kind of the London southern area, because, as I've mentioned, the ASBO only applies to certain areas. So they wanted to move to an area where they weren't as well known and could perhaps get away with committing crimes a bit longer without being caught. So they moved back to the London area. Okay, so after their move, they continued to commit crimes such as car theft and arson and burglaries. In around kind of 2008, Joseph conducted a burglary on an elderly man, and during that burglary he threatened him with a knife. So obviously the elderly man reported this to the police, and actually Joseph was caught on CCTV in the area with the knife, so he was arrested and charged with kind of, I'm not sure what the term would be, armed burglary, which is quite a serious crime. So he was put in prison, and his stint was kind of indefinite. I couldn't find a specific kind of number that he was in there. I think he was just put in prison because he was put obviously in straight away because of the ASBO sort of situation. But he was in there for around about 9 years. Yeah, and while he was in prison, several like red flags were raised. So when you're in prison in the UK, you have forensic psychologists that would work there that would kind of assess prisoners and things, and you also have you also get feedback from prison guards and things like that. And there was a lot of flags raised by the kind of staff at the prison that Joseph was a risk to other people and also to himself. They also tend to, so you can send obviously letters in and out of prison. It's one of the main ways that people communicate. Phone calls are made in a public area and they're all recorded, so I think a lot of people prefer to send letters. However, these letters are also intercepted, and quite a few of the letters that Joseph had sent raised some more red flags, and it was kind of raised that he was possibly a paedophile and that he posed a risk of sexual assault to young or teenage girls. Despite all of this, Joseph was released from prison in 2017. And unfortunately, while Joseph was in prison, his brother was also serving another sentence for burglary. And while his brother was in prison, he committed suicide. So that was obviously quite a... I don't know whether Joseph knew about it in prison, but he came out of prison and his brother was unfortunately gone. And this kind of, I think this kind of began that kind of spiral that Joseph went on. So he began immediately just went straight back into car thefts and burglaries. And he was arrested again in a really short period of time. He only went back to prison. I couldn't find the exact time, but it was several months. It was maybe like 4 or 5 months. And in late 2018, Joseph was released from prison again. So in April 2019, Joseph conducted his first confirmed attack. At 3:30 a.m., a 21-year-old was walking home alone from a night out in the London area when Joseph abducted her at knife point and took her to an empty house where he raped her for several hours until morning when he finally released her. Just 4 days later, in the early hours of April 25th, Joseph abducted a 25-year-old woman at knife point again in the London area and raped and sexually assaulted her for over 14 hours in his car. While she was still actually in his car, he abducted another woman, aged 21, and assaulted her as well. He then tried to take both of these women to a hotel, like he tried to book a hotel room and sneak them in without anybody noticing. Amazingly, these women managed to overpower him. I think they like kind of attacked him with a glass bottle and they both escaped. So although all of these attacks, like these kind of three abductions and rapes, were reported, the police did not initially link them together, and definitely not to Joseph, and he fled from London to Manchester. So just over a week later, on May the 5th, in a bar in Manchester, Joseph met a woman. He started buying her drinks, talking to her, found out that she had children. He managed to persuade her to let him walk her home and then managed to convince her to be allowed inside the house. Once he was inside the house, he tied her up and then went to the bedrooms where he found the woman's 17-year-old daughter and 11-year-old son, who he also raped and sexually assaulted. Joseph eventually left the house at around about 8 a.m. and the children managed to untie their mother and obviously alert the police. Again, I don't think the police linked this to what had been going on in London and not to Joseph. On the same day, Joseph was driving around in his car and around about 1:30 p.m., so just a few hours later, he saw a 71-year-old woman leaving the supermarket on her own. He abducted her again at knife point and raped her, kept her in the car, and several hours later, after driving around with her still in the car, he abducted a 13-year-old and sexually assaulted her. Amazingly, both victims managed to escape the car later that evening. And just a few hours later, Joseph was driving around and he spotted 2 14-year-old girls walking alone who he abducted. He threatened to murder them. However, like, just amazingly, the police had actually, like, a police car had actually been really nearby and saw this happening. So they kind of gave chase to Joseph. He fled his car. I think the girls got out and they were okay. He jumped in a taxi. I can't find out exact like kind of time of how long this went on, but Joseph was eventually apprehended hiding up a tree. There is CCTV footage, I think, or police cam footage of this if you're interested and you want to see, but he was eventually found hiding in a tree and he was arrested. So finally, kind of the police worked out that he had committed these other spate of crimes, and he was charged, and he was on December 6th, 2019, Joseph McCann was found guilty of 37 offences in total, including rape, kidnapping, sexual assaults, and he was sentenced to 33 life sentences, with a minimum of 30 years to be completed before he is eligible for parole. Okay, so that's obviously just like a horrific case, but I think it's a very important one. I think it would be very interesting to see what Joseph was doing in the lead up to these crimes, because as I mentioned before, I don't think at the age of 35 that he decided to begin kidnapping and raping women. Obviously, there was lots of red flags raised while he was in prison, and the fact that letters intercepted that he had given kind of an indication that he had these ideas or feelings or was given these kind of red flags about paedophilia and an attraction to young girls and posing a threat to other people. Obviously, there was something going on. This didn't just suddenly happen. The fact that he had the kind of ability or the knowledge to go out at 3:30 a.m. and take a knife with him and abduct his first victim so easily leads me to believe that he had committed something like this before. Or at the very least, he'd been following women before this. In my opinions, these actions and his ability to abduct and rape so many women, kind of successfully, I know that's a horrible word to use, but I don't think it was a fluke. I think he definitely had done something like this before, and there was planning that had gone into this, which is exactly what a predatory stalker does. They pursue, they watch, and they stalk to plan the attack. So I think as well as the letters intercepted while he was in prison, there must have been other red flags previously, particularly when looking at the crimes that he committed. I couldn't find like a full list of them, or they didn't go into much detail, but I would guess that things like the burglary, and I know that he was convicted a few times for stealing handbags, I think that these might have been kind of the beginnings of this kind of predatory stalking behaviour. And I suspect that he probably targeted some of these victims and he conducted some of these crimes like certain burglaries and certain handbag stealing based on sexual motivations and not kind of monetary motivations. I do also believe it was incredibly amazing that so many of his victims escaped, because I think he was at this point kind of on a spree of escalation, and murder was, I have no doubt that he was planning to murder. Particularly, I think the most worrying one is the women that he tried to get into that hotel room. So, like, just thank God that they managed to escape. I also think, as I mentioned before, that it's quite interesting that before this spree happened, just shortly before he kind of began this, his brother committed suicide. And as I've mentioned before, this could be seen as what is called kind of as a major life stressor that caused him to escalate. So if you look at a lot of predatory stalkers, serial rapists, serial killers, even like mass shooters, there is a lot of there's a lot of connections that find a major life stressor kind of has happened just before they escalate. So that could be something like losing a family member, wife leaving, children leaving, losing a job, something that just kind of tips them over the edge. And I do think it's a shame that cases like this don't get the same coverage that cases do when the victims are murdered. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because the press don't think it's as interesting or it doesn't get as many views. I don't know. I just think it's important that cases like this are still covered and brought to light to raise awareness that these crimes are very real and they do happen, and actually they do kind of happen at a much higher rate than serial killers, and it's just an incredibly damaging thing for the victims to go through, obviously. Okay, so that's kind of all the information that I could find on that case, but I did just want to cover it today because I do think it's quite an important one. But before I kind of wrap things up, I do have a movie recommendation for today. It's actually a really great book as well. So, and it's one of the rare times that I think I have found a movie and a book are kind of on the same level. Like, the film was just as good as the book. So it's not specifically about a predatory stalker. It is really hard to find books or films that are specifically about predatory stalkers, because obviously, just as with press coverage, people tend to prefer to make things about serial killers. But it's definitely shows the patterns that I've kind of discussed today, that kind of behaviour that they exhibit, particularly kind of the element of unknowingly, of the victim unknowingly being followed, and the kind of methods that they go to gather information to plan an attack. So this one, it has some really interesting kind of methods that the kind of perpetrator does. So he even goes through her, like, the victim's rubbish bins to find out how she had a boyfriend and things. Yeah, it's really, really interesting if you're interested in stalking, if you're interested in specifically in predatory stalking and the behaviours I've mentioned today. The movie and the book is called Kiss the Girls. The film came out in 1997, and it stars Morgan Freeman and Ashley Judd. It also stars, I can't remember his name, he's the main character from the film The Princess Bride. I think he might be called Cary Elwes, but I've probably mispronounced that. But yeah, it's a really, really good film. It actually got a terrible review on Rotten Tomatoes, but I think it's a good film, so I don't know if that says something about my taste in films. Anyways, the book is part of the Alex Cross series by James Patterson, who is an amazing writer. I'm sure you've heard of him. So yeah, if you're interested in kind of seeing the behaviours that I've discussed today in a really good portrayal, or reading about it, I would definitely go and look that up if you need some entertainment during lockdown. Yeah, I will try and find out and put on Instagram where you can watch it. I have a feeling it's available on Sky at the minute in the UK. It's possibly on Netflix, but I'll try and find out and let you know. And that's all I kind of have for this week. Thanks again for being so patient with me while I was kind of off sick. I hope everybody is doing well and staying safe. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, the winner of the book giveaway will be announced on Instagram when this episode is live. And if you have any stalker experiences you would like to share for the listener special, the listener special episode, then please do message me. If you're struggling to write it without kind of including names and places, don't worry, I'll remove those, or I'll change them for you. I'll try and keep everything really confidential and anonymous. Yeah, and I almost forgot, I now do have a Facebook page. So my lovely cousin managed to set me up a Facebook page, and she is running it for me. So I will link it on my Instagram. And if you want to get in touch, you can also Facebook message. Okay, thank you, and I'll speak to you all next week.